And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Under the Radar podcast, streaming to you live here. We're actually recording this here Wednesday evening around 9:30 p.m. So for those of you where we discuss things that happened after this, please forgive us.
It's a busy night in college basketball, but
David, how are we doing tonight?
Very good. It's been a very busy night in college basketball. Granted, most of these are on the radar games, not under the radar games, but really, really busy night tonight.
Yeah, it really has been. And but I mean, I think we've got to start again on a somber note, like we did the other night with Dean Smith. That we lost another legend today. Jerry Tarkanian passed away. Especially on the Under the Radar podcast, those UNLV teams. That's an under the radar conference, and it was even back then. There was no one else in that conference that was any significant NCAA threat. There was pretty much UNLV and nothing. And what he did with those teams, four Final Fours, the national championship, a year when he almost went undefeated, something Kentucky's trying to do this year.
Right.
Justin, I thought he was just a great coach. I mean, he was known just as much, I think, for his battles with the NCAA as anything else, but
Well, he was, and I know that he probably had a shady reputation, for lack of a better term. And I'm not saying it was entirely undeserved. I really don't know, but he did way more good things than bad, in my opinion. He took on the NCAA and won. Essentially, back then, the NCAA really had no due process. I mean, they could basically question anyone and build a case on theories and hearsay without any actual proof. And he went after them for that. And I think one of the reasons he has such a shady reputation is because he was always in trouble. But one of the things that kind of came out later on was that he was under a microscope when so many other people weren't. As a coach, he had a great career, as you said, in Las Vegas, four Final Fours with them, and he really built them up from nothing. I mean, it was a mid-level Big West team, if that. I don't know exactly how many NCAA tournaments he went to. At Long Beach State, went to four NCAA tournaments, I believe, two Elite Eights in 1971 and 1972. Losing to UCLA both times, because you got to remember, or if, okay, I don't remember, I wasn't alive, but you have to understand, at that up until 1979, it was strictly geographical. Long Beach was ranked in the top 10 regularly, but because of UCLA, they would have never been able to get to a Final Four unless they went through UCLA. So he had some really good teams even before getting to UNLV when he was at Long Beach State, another Big West school. Just And I believe, unless you count last year, it was the last time a team from outside a power conference won a national championship.
You've been talking about UConn, but yeah, it was one of the, I mean, what they did, if we were doing Under the Radar 25 years ago, David,
Yeah.
we would be talking about UNLV. Well, we may not be talking about UNLV, but we'd be talking about UNLV's conference at least.
Yeah.
UNLV obviously would have been top 25, but would not have qualified for us. But
Right.
I mean, it is, and I remember. I mean, growing up, when I fell in love with college basketball, it was watching ESPN and watching Big Monday and staying up till 2 a.m. to watch that Big West end of the triple header when UNLV would be playing Santa Barbara, or they'd
Yeah.
be playing Cal State Fullerton, or they'd be playing New Mexico State.
Right. They had
Even
a
though they
hard
always blew out those games, it was always like, well, I gotta stay up till 2 a.m. and watch the end of the game,
Right. And they had a hard time putting a schedule together because, I mean, even good teams didn't want to play them. But again, it just, I mean, he basically took a Big West mid-level caliber team, as you would think of it today, 3,500, 4,000 people at the games, and turned it into the number one team in the country where they were averaging about 18,000.
Well,
And
let me put it this way, David. I mean, I think what he did at UNLV is very similar to what Mark Few has done at Gonzaga,
very similar, yes.
but maybe even more so because he then was able to. I mean, maybe it happened after he left, but the presence he got for UNLV ended up with them getting first into the WAC and then into the Mountain West, and now
Yes.
becoming a much more major program than they had been.
Absolutely, for sure. Sorry, he's gone. He had been sick for a while, but again, just I mean, a real trailblazer, really. And in a lot of the things, a lot of the reasons we have the things we do, as far as NCAA on the administrative side, is because of him.
Right. So obviously, our thoughts and our prayers out with his family at this time, and just another legend. You know, they say sometimes that bad things come in threes, and I hope this time it's only two, though, with him and Dean Smith. But well, I guess maybe there is a third, because there is something else that's on the verge of passing away, and it's not an individual; it's an entire, not even an entire team like we had with UAB losing football, not even an entire athletics program getting shut down like happened with schools like, I think, Morris Brown ended up doing that when they tried to go up to D1 and failed. An entire university that is on the verge of being shut down academically, athletically, everything. David, why don't you fill us in, because I see you've got them mentioned right there.
Okay, so the South Carolina Board of – it's not called the Board of Regents, but that's basically what it would be called. Mm. Essentially, a body of the state legislature that oversees – education in the state of South Carolina has recommended that South Carolina shut down all operations, classes, sporting events, extracurricular activities, everything, for the next two academic years. Their reasons for doing so are, from what I can tell, is the funding is just the severe lack of funding and the amount of debt that the college has. South Carolina State is an HBCU. It depends on who you talk to. South Carolina State is claiming that they are not receiving adequate funding for the state, the way the Citadel is, the way College of Charleston is, the way South Carolina certainly is in Columbia, the way Clemson is, USC Upstate. I mean, there are a lot of very good, respectable, healthy institutions in that state that are public schools. For whatever reason, South Carolina State is not on that plane. The state, on the other hand, is claiming that the funding is sufficient, and South Carolina State's leadership, I guess that's the president and the board of trustees, has just grossly mismanaged it. I don't really know any more than that. I mean, there's two sides to every story. Again, with UAB, do you believe that the board of trustees are sabotaging it, or do you believe that it was legitimately no other choice that they had to shut it down? This is kind of similar. I will say this, HBCU or not, I can't help but think, with that many healthy public institutions, why is this one struggling so badly?
David, and that's why from what I've read, there was multiple chances that have been given to the president and to the board and to the administration there at South Carolina State to say, listen, you're asking for this money. I think they gave them $12 million 2 years ago. I think they gave them another $10 million earlier this year, and said, show us what you're doing. Give us your business plan. Show us what you're spending this money on. And the answers were very vague, were not laid out. And I'm getting the feel that this is really hopefully is just a kind of a kick in the butt that says, say, South Carolina State, get somebody in there to show us what you're doing with this money. Yeah. And if you can't, we are going to shut the doors. Now, if they really can't, then you begin to wonder if the money is being mismanaged and ending up in people's back pockets that it shouldn't be in.
Right.
In which case, the only thing to do is clean house. And by cleaning house, you shut it down for 2 years. You fire everybody. I think they clearly want the president there out.
Yes. It's very upsetting to everyone there. Again, The people that are getting hurt the most by this have absolutely nothing to do with why it's being closed, and that's the students, not just athletically, but everything. Their student body enrollment is roughly 3,000. Chad, you're the host. We're going to try. I get carried away with stuff like this. But it reaches a demographic, South Carolina State and all HBCUs, that a lot of other colleges do not reach. A lot of these kids come from low socioeconomic backgrounds. They came from low-resource high schools. They probably didn't get a lot of family support. Maybe they already have kids themselves. Maybe their parents were in prison. So to me, I realize that a lot of people question the the necessity of HBCUs now that we aren't segregated anymore. To me, it isn't reaching a demographic of minorities or ethnicities. To me, it reaches out to a demographic of people that come from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and they absolutely do serve a purpose. Maybe not in your world or my world, but in a lot of people's world, it does. It makes going to college a more realistic option for someone that does come from a low socioeconomic background.
And I don't even know if but I think there is some pride also in going to HBCUs. I know people who, you know, I've gone up to them and said, "Hey, where'd you go to school?" He goes, "Oh, I went to an HBCU." "Oh, great. Which one?" You know. But you know, I think there is, you know, there's a source of pride. A lot of these schools have been around for a very, very long time. We're not talking about startup colleges like Florida Gulf Coast is. We're talking about schools that have been in existence for 100 plus years now.
Yeah. And they were on the right side of history when a lot of other colleges were not.
Right.
If it's not being sufficiently funded, I hate that. If it's being mismanaged by its leaders, I hate that. And really, they need to, if that's what it is, if it's what they're alleging, then they need to find a way to clean house and not close the school down. Athletically, and again, this is a basketball podcast, what it means is obviously they're not going to be playing basketball for the next 2 years. To the best of my knowledge, and this isn't the kind of thing that happens, if they bring athletics back, they would be a transitional program. They would have to reclassify.
I think they'd have to probably reapply to be in the NCAA because they will lose their accreditation, and I have read it is a fact. So it's going to be a couple of years after reopening the doors that they're even an accredited college, and the NCAA isn't even going to want to talk to them until that point.
Right, you have to be accredited, and it could take as long as 2 years after they open to get it back. So I can't imagine that the MEAC, as you and probably most people, the entire conference consists of HBCUs. If and when South Carolina State Athletics does come back, if it even closes, I can't imagine that the MEAC would not take them back. They seem to support one another, but
if they're so strapped cash-wise and there's going to be a reorganization there, they may not go back to D1. I mean, they may end up being a D2 or a D3 program. This may be the end of South Carolina State when they play their final game and lose in the MEAC tournament, unless they win the MEAC tournament this year, which I doubt they would. That could be the last time we see South Carolina State as a D1 program, for the next 20 years.
And I believe Winston-Salem State transitioned down, but they never. Morris Brown, I don't know if they completed transition or not. Another HBCU, now it's a smaller private school in Atlanta. They were Division I. They lost their accreditation, as you said earlier, and they basically just went poof. Everything gone.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few failure stories, and it actually was some of those failures which led the NCAA to rewrite the rules for transitioning up to D1 to include, most importantly, that you have to have an offer from a conference to join before you can begin transitioning up, because Morris Brown was thrown into the additional problem there of they didn't have a conference to be in, they couldn't even get scheduling done, they couldn't do anything.
Right.
One other thing of note before we get into the actual schools here in our Under the Radar podcast, David, beginning, I believe, tomorrow in Indianapolis is the mock committee for the media. Are you excited? Are you ready to be in the room there?
Well, apparently, I am still banned from Indianapolis.
What?
You were supposed to be clearing this up. Well, it's because of what happened last year in the committee room during, well, anyway. I will not be there.
I was so excited that you could be on tomorrow night. We were going to be having a report from what's going on with the mock
committee. Well, I'm still planning on possibly going up there anyway and just trying to clear things up so I can get in.
All right. Well, tune in tomorrow night, everybody. We'll see if David Griggs is even here, if he's in jail, if he's where he is.
Got to clear this up for us, John.
All right. Let's move into our teams now. And what we want to do, like always, is run through nothing because I just lost my computer screen. Are we back?
Yes.
I still hear? Okay, good. We want to run through, as we do every week, all of our under-the-radar conferences, which is does not include our 9 traditional multi-bid leagues and does not include our nationally ranked teams, Gonzaga, Northern Iowa, and Wichita State being the 3 right now.
Yeah.
We'll run through everybody else. We're going to go through who we think is going to win the conference and throw this extra element in there for this week, David. Also, do you think any of these teams have a, you know, is there a specific team that you think has a legitimate chance of moving out of the round of 64 into the round of 32?
Okay, yeah.
You know, we'll throw it out there. But let's start at the America East, as always, where Albany is one of the few teams in the country remaining undefeated in its conference. Let me throw it out there. Here's another question. Do you think that Albany can do that, can run the table in the America East right now?
I think somebody will end up getting them, although their schedule was front-loaded and they've already gone through that.
They have four conference games left, three home and one at UMBC, who is awful.
Yes. So, okay, with that in mind, yeah, I think they're going to run the table and go through for the double. If they finish first, they'll be hosting the entire conference tournament, and plus they'll be playing a sub-340 team in the quarterfinals of that tournament. So, yeah, I would expect them to run the table. They've been surprisingly good in conference play after I just wasn't that – they didn't jump out at me at all in out-of-conference play. And coming into the season in November, there weren't really a team I was expecting much out of. I think we liked Hartford a little bit, Stony Brook a little bit, Vermont. Albany, I don't know, I wasn't too big on them, but they've certainly shown that they're the best team in the league so far.
Yeah, they have. There are three home games left. They've got Hartford, Stony Brook, and Vermont at home. They are three tough, probably their three toughest home games in conference play. But again, they've already won at all three of those teams. And their toughest game left of the season is a non-conference game they've got coming up Friday night at NJIT.
Yeah, that one's going to be huge. The team of the people. We're going to have to dispatch you to that one.
I've been thinking about it. I've been trying to see if I can work out my schedule to get up there in time for tip-off. You know, $9 to get into a game is the best deal in D1, I think. So.
And that one's going to be fun. Yeah. The best $9 you'll ever spend.
So anybody that is in northern New Jersey and watching us, it's anywhere near Newark, go to the game Friday night. Support the team of the people.
Support the people's team.
Over in the Atlantic Sun, where you still have a tie for first place here between Florida Gulf Coast and North Florida, both at 7-1. Gulf Coast, I've been really impressed with the way they've been playing lately. They have now won six straight games. Haven't lost since they lost at North Florida.
Right.
Don't play North Florida again until February 25th, so a little while till we get that rematch.
Yeah, Upstate's been a little bit disappointing. But again, how about Matt Driscoll's North Florida team? I don't think they're going to catch Gulf Coast. I think Gulf Coast will finish first and host the tournament and win it. But one of the more improved teams, well, certainly in the Atlantic Sun, but really across the board. This is just a very good year for North Florida, best ever.
Yeah, I mean, North Florida has a much more difficult schedule remaining. They have to play at Upstate tomorrow night, and they are their remaining game against Gulf Coast is on the road. So even if both teams win every other game except the game against each other, Gulf Coast will still be favored to win the conference regular season by winning that home game against North Florida. But still, this is. I think North Florida made a run in the A-Sun tournament a few years back and made it to the championship game. But
they did. I don't remember the exact year. It was Matt Driscoll's first year or second year there. Matt Driscoll was the associate head coach at Baylor and was part of that first Elite Eight team that Baylor had under Scott Drew. So, and he was considered one of the best assistants. He's doing really well there. But, they kind of made a run to the championship. It was after a rather unimpressive year, and they did not succeed in winning that game. I think it was 50-19 at the half or something.
Actually, I just looked it up. It was the 2011 season. They were 13-18 on the season coming into the conference tournament, beat Jacksonville and East Tennessee State. And actually, that Jacksonville win was notable because that was their first win ever over their in-city rival, Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And then they got pounded by Belmont 87-46 in that title game that year. And that's the last time that North Florida was anywhere near an NCAA tournament bid. And they could be playing a game in at Gulf Coast on national TV there for the conference championship and a shot at the NCAAs this year.
Yep.
Moving on to the Big Sky, where we have the But it will be the under-the-radar game of the day tomorrow night. I'm going to reveal it early here. Sacramento State and Eastern Washington with their second game of the season. Sac State won at home earlier this year. This is the rematch at Eastern. Huge game in the Big Sky standings, though.
Huge, and it's a huge stakes game because, as you know, the regular season champion hosts the entire tournament. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes. Which gives them a distinct advantage. As good as Eastern Washington has been, as big as their win at Indiana was, they need to win tomorrow, or they're not, or they're going to have a really hard time catching Sac State, simply because nobody else in the league, other than possibly Montana, is probably capable of beating either one of these teams. So this is probably the deciding factor in who will host this conference tournament.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, Montana and Northern Arizona, two games back in the loss column, but it is a two-team race, and a two-team race between, I mean, an Eastern Washington team that has had a couple of good years, but not very many, and a Sacramento State team that now, I believe, at 16 wins already, is already their school record at D1, at the D1 level.
Yeah, so again, really good stuff tomorrow. Eastern Washington, if you haven't seen their home court, it's awesome. It seats about 800 people. Oh, it's awesome.
And it's not all bright red like that football field, which honestly, right. I can't even watch that.
Yeah.
It's painful to see that red, but yeah. It's not painful like that. It should be a great crowd tomorrow night. I expect it to be crazy there.
Yeah.
Over in the Big South, or maybe we should call it the Big Mess Conference this year, David.
Yeah, and again, when you look at the kinds of stakes games this conference could be having, literally every game, it's kind of unfortunate, so they deserve it. Liberty has separated themselves from the rest of the league. They've just done it on the wrong end of the league.
As of Sunday night, we had a seven-way tie at 8-4 for first place. As we sit here right now, some of those teams have played head-to-head. We now have a four-way tie at 9-4 and three teams at 8-5.
Yeah, one game separating seven teams in what really should be, you know, high stakes with home court advantage on the line, but it's not. It's all just a jamboree. It's preseason exhibitions.
And what you're referring to there is the fact that Coastal Carolina, who is one of the teams in the mix, they're one of the 8-5 teams after they lost at Charleston Southern tonight. Yeah. But they will be hosting the entire conference tournament. Now, what I will throw out there is it is a very small arena, and I believe that they do split the tickets up among the schools, so it's not going to be a normal, like, you know, 95% Coastal Carolina crowd, but fans will find a way in that game.
There's another arena in, I didn't think it was on their campus arena.
Is it not? Okay, it might not be. Okay. I have it listed as being played in Conway, South Carolina, which is where their campus is.
Oh, well, then it is, yeah, okay, yeah. That's where it is then. Wow. But man, what a show if this would be campus site. And again, they rob themselves, and we say it every week, but it's true every week, they rob themselves of so many great weekly storylines by having a predetermined conference tournament site. I mean, look at the intensity. Look at the atmospheres. Just imagine the storylines and the lead-ins to every single game literally for the rest of the year. But, oh well, I guess it doesn't matter.
And I just did confirm, David, it is at the HT Center, the HTC Center there in Conway. It is Coastal's home court. It is not. Okay. If there is another arena there in that Myrtle Beach area, Big South ain't using it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, good for them. It'll be a fun tournament. I'll certainly be watching.
Yeah. It's one of the first tournaments to tip off most seasons as well. So when we get into our nightly video notebooks, I think, that we normally do during championship week, we'll be talking about them bright and early.
Right.
David, the Big West Conference, you are been touting this Long Beach State team all season. What the hell happened?
Well, I mean, it's a bitter rivalry, and you just got to take that into account. All week long, because I knew that you were going to have a field day with this, I've been trying to think of a way to positively spin a how you can lose at home to a sub NIT team like that. Long Beach is not as good as I thought they were. They're still good. They're not inside the bubble good. I actually thought they were. I thought that if they won out in this league, they would have a very strong case, at least on paper and potentially off paper, to get inside the bubble, but it doesn't matter now. It is a three-horse race in this conference with it being the latter format. Two teams will buy into the semis. Long Beach is certainly – what's that?
It's not a ladder.
Oh, it's not a ladder?
No. No, the Big West tournament is an eight-team four quarterfinals. They reseed after the quarters into the semis, but there's no ladder. All four quarters will be played on the same day.
Oh, stupid.
and it's all played in Anaheim at a neutral, alleged neutral court.
Well,
I guess it's at Cal State Fullerton's backyard there, and Cal State Fullerton looks like they'll be the team that doesn't even qualify for the Big West tournament. So.
Well, they okay, deservedly so. I don't know. I was kind of surprised. Long Beach, again, played that murderous out-of-conference schedule. Didn't rack up a whole lot of notable wins, but I thought they had done just enough to where if they blew through the Big West, they would have built an RPI into the 30s and had enough road wins to at least make a compelling case for the committee. I don't think there's a case to be made anymore. And again, perhaps they're not even the best team in the league.
Let's speak about that. You know, we just spoke about that Sacramento State team having its best season ever. We have the same thing going on out west at the top of this conference, with the Aggies of UC Davis.
Yeah,
what an amazing season they've had!
It's amazing. It's one of the best stories in all of college basketball. It's largely ignored, I guess, by the national media. It's a tremendous turnaround. It has made the Big West, at least for me, destination programming, because there's so much fun to watch, especially when they're at home. It's the most fun I think you can have at a game for the price of the ticket. I mean, just great stuff. I'm on their bandwagon, and you know, I would love to see this team get into the round of 64.
I would too. This has just been a great story here. After, I think it wasn't that bad of a story we had last year either, with Cal Poly making their first ever tournament
bid. It was a horrible story.
Well, you know, it was a horrible story because of how bad of a team they were. But yeah. I always like to see a team get its first ever appearance.
The reason I would like to see Davis get their first ever appearance is because Davis is actually good. Cal Poly really wasn't. They just won the tournament. But again, I for the tournament in Anaheim, I hope the UC Davis fans make the trip there and go crazy and root them on, and I hope they are able to get it done. I like Long Beach, too. I like Irvine. I just like this conference. It's a fun conference. I really wish they would consider going to campus sites.
It is. Well, you know what? I don't think you could do campus sites when you've got Hawaii in the field.
Well, they're just not allowed to play.
Okay. I mean, it would be really interesting if they said, you know, you've got to play on Tuesday at Long Beach and Thursday at Hawaii, but I just
right.
Don't,
well, that wouldn't
got to be in a neutral site here.
Yeah, well, with Hawaii, I mean, you would have to have them, one of the campuses would have to adopt them.
Well, I mean, the way I would propose going is you use the Big Sky format where the regular season champion hosts the whole event.
Yeah.
Because that you could do, you know, fly everybody out to Hawaii and nobody would complain too much, I don't think.
No,
I wouldn't complain if you flew me out to Hawaii.
Right. I mean, I will go out there to cover it.
Speaking of teams that have never been made the field before, William & Mary is on that very short list of five teams that have been in D1 since 1948 when it started and have not made the field before, sitting in a game ahead of UNC Wilmington in first place in the Colonial right now.
Yes, and again, they've been so close a couple times. They almost made it as an at-large. I want to say it was 08, 09.
Right.
Or at least we thought they were right on the bubble. We didn't put them in. But, again, very, very close last year. I mean, really a heartbreaking loss. You know, not going to get a whole lot of favors. Another conference with it at a predetermined site. But they're capable of winning it. And I don't know. A part of me just thinks almost with William and Mary, how heartbreaking, in what heartbreaking fashion will they not make it this time?
Yeah, and it's tough. You look at this conference, you know, we thought Northeastern was good at the beginning of the year. They have slipped a bit. We thought Hofstra was a contender. They've really fallen. Delaware, who was awful at the beginning of the year, is now up to 5-8 in the conference, which kind of blows my mind because I didn't. There's a point there where I didn't think Delaware would win a single game all season.
Right, and they've won. Yeah. To be fair, we thought Charleston would be awful, and they are.
Yeah, we did. That's about the only thing that's right here. Now, UNC Wilmington, we've spoken to them a few times. They are now in second place. I think they're the second most dangerous team. The most dangerous team to William & Mary right now.
Yeah. And again, like William & Mary, I believe that was our preseason pick to win the league. That's about the only thing. So we got the bookends right. We got the first and last place team right so far. Nothing else. But, God, okay, Bill and Mary, just get it done. Pop your cherry. Get it done. Get there.
Okay. Conference USA is always worth a few minutes of a conversation here. As of the last bracket that I did, and nothing has changed since then, I did have Old Dominion in above the first four, which means that right now I think their profile is good enough for an at-large bid. Yes. If they need an at-large bid, they're going to have another loss, but there are some losses I think they can withstand in this conference.
Well, as long as it comes in the conference tournament, I think they'll be fine. They're just one game out of first. One game separates five teams right now. They should be able to finish on top if they win out, and they're good enough to win out. So if they do that, I agree. If Old Dominion wins out, I think they're inside the bubble. Especially, and I know UAB is probably not even an NIT team, but if they happen to, but UAB way up in the standings, if they happen to fall to UAB in Birmingham, it's not on the UAB campus, it's downtown in the Coliseum there.
Okay.
But the women's tournament's on campus, they're hosting both. But I think the committee would forgive Old Dominion and put them in if they win out and lose in the conference tournament and UAB's the team that beats them. Or if anybody beats them.
Well, I think if it's UAB, I think if it's La Tech, I think if it's Western Kentucky, I think if it's UTEP, I think any of those four teams,
right.
If Old Dominion doesn't lose again in the regular season, loses to one of them, it doesn't even have to be in the championship game. It could be a semifinal.
Semifinal. Yeah, as long as they avoid a bad loss in the quarters, I think they're all right.
Right. I mean, if they go and they lose to North Texas, we got a whole other story here. But
right, and they don't have to worry about losing to Southern Miss because they're out.
Yeah, Southern Miss is out no matter what and probably wouldn't have qualified either. Florida Atlantic, they probably don't have to worry about either because the last two teams will not qualify for the conference tournament. They did cut down to a 12-team format this year as opposed to the 14 or was it a 16-team format I think they went with last year.
Yeah, it was a 16-team ladder last year. So.
In terms of Old Dominion's schedule, they do have four road games left, including the aforementioned North Texas at Rice. And then this week at San Antonio and at UTEP, so they've...
Those are, well, with the exception of UTEP, those are must-not-loses. I don't even want to say they're must-wins. Those are by-game caliber road games.
And I think they should be really scared about this game tomorrow night at Texas-San Antonio. I mean, UTSA is probably, if you went to the top of the best of the garbage in the conference, and there's a lot of garbage in this conference right now, so it's a dangerous road game.
Well, yeah, but if you can't beat Texas San Antonio on the road, good God.
Yeah, but
we're talking about the teams inside the bubble.
But you're also talking about an Old Dominion team that lost at Middle Tennessee, that lost, what was the other one they lost?
UAB.
UAB, yeah.
Yeah.
David, the Horizon League, we almost had a major upset tonight, but Green Bay made a huge comeback late and won at Youngstown State to remain in the three-way tie for first place here.
Yeah.
Remaining... Still, I think a team that is not in the field bubble-wise, but their numbers
they'll be on the nomination board.
They're not going to – you know, when the committee starts, they actually put every regular season champion automatically onto the nomination board. As they get into it, they probably go through it once or twice and kind of clean up the nomination board. And they normally will do stuff like remove Ola. You know, Texas Southern is not realistically going to get an at-large bid. Let's take them off the field.
Yes.
Green Bay is never going to come off that board if they keep winning.
And when we do our committee, that's typically our first order of business. And I don't even think we go team by team. It's just like we name five or six of them and get them right off of there. But Green Bay will not come off the board until the very end. they'll be one of the last teams out. That's where that phrase comes from. But, again, a team you really like in this conference, do you at large like them, or do you just like them to win the league potentially? I noticed that you had them in your top 10 as this Valpo team.
I did. You know what? I reevaluated them this past week. I had kind of been starting to think that they might be at large capable, especially with the win over Murray State. When it came down to it, that's all they really got. And at this point, I don't think they ever get up there in the I just don't think they could do anything to get into the at-large bid conversation, short of maybe beating Green Bay Friday night at home, winning the league outright, and somehow beating Green Bay in the semifinals of the tournament, which would be impossible because that'd be their matchup in the finals. So,
And again, with this conference, I just love this conference. Cleveland State right in there too. You want to talk about high-stakes games? We have a three-way tie. It's a double bye for the first place team.
First two teams get the
double.
Yeah,
for the first two teams, and it's at campus sites. So if you, I mean, essentially finishing first, you buy into the semis and you're at home.
But it's actually a kind of a strange thing. The first round
is at campus sites.
At campus sites. The quarters and the semis are both at the regular season champion, and then the finals go to the highest remaining seed.
Yeah, the best way I can explain the format is that there are two teams that make the semis, and then there are two tournaments of four for the other two spots in the semis, only now that it's a 9-team league instead of a 10-team league, you have one tournament of four and one tournament of three.
But it is two tournaments of three this year, actually. Milwaukee's on the APR list.
Yeah. So it's just a standard 8-team ladder. Okay, never mind. Yeah.
But I guess you'd call it a standard 8-team ladder, but you don't have home court advantage in the quarterfinals. Those will all be played either at Green Bay, at Valpo, or possibly at Cleveland State. Although, as I've mentioned in our forums, I don't think this Cleveland State team is legitimate.
No. But for now, they're up there, so we shall see.
Yes, they are.
I don't either, but okay.
Over in the Ivy League, Yale to Harvard at home, and now they're tied.
Eye-gouging first half. I paid $8 to watch it, or $9, whatever it was, and it felt like they ripped me off by about $45.
What was it, like 15 to 12 at halftime?
Yeah, it was bad shooting over bad defense. And again, it's a rival. I guess this is both of these teams are better by far than what they played in that first half and really what they played in that game. But, Chad, this is my thing. Part of being a good team is dealing with big game situations. Harvard has not been able to do that for the most part, getting blown out at Virginia. Not just getting beat, but not even showing up. And then Yale at home. I think the atmosphere before the game was so big and so intense for this rivalry game with NCAA tournament implications, and you can get two games ahead of Harvard, that Yale was almost psyched out by their own fans. I mean, did you get that impression? I mean, they were terrible in that.
They were, and at this point, Yale has no room for error here. They need to. They may need to win out. I don't think they can afford another loss. Harvard's already suffered their other loss, though, when they lost that game to Dartmouth. I think Harvard builds off of this Yale win. On top of that, Harvard's already played four of their five out of their seven road games in the Ivy League. They have eight games left, only two on the road, at Cornell and at Columbia.
Yeah,
I don't think Harvard. I think Yale's only chance is to win out, including winning at Harvard on March 6th.
Right. Now there are no tiebreakers in this conference. So if for whatever reason Harvard does slip up and they beat Yale a second time and they both end tied at the standings, there is no head-to-head tiebreaker. There would be a third game between the two.
Yes. Even if one team swept the other one.
Yes.
And they still remain tied. You do not go to a tiebreaker. They generally will find a neutral court to play it on.
Yeah.
When the Harvard and Princeton were tied, I think they played the game at Yale.
Yes, it'll be at one of the campuses that's equidistant from the two.
Or they've even, I recall back the year that there was a three-way tie between Penn, Princeton, and Yale. I think they went to either Lehigh or Lafayette, one of those schools,
yes,
to play the tournament. They found a somewhat neutral courts somewhere to play those games.
Oh, really? I didn't realize they went out of conference.
Yeah, they did go out of conference. I don't know if it was that year, if it was the year it was just a two-way tie between Penn and Princeton, but one of those times they did go to one of those Patriot League schools to play the tournament. The playoff, right. I guess you would call it. Metro Atlantic Conference, Iona and Tim Kloos are continuing to lead the way here. Ryder, two games back, the second best team. Unless they Kloos during the MAC tournament, Iona should be in the dance.
I think so, and I got to give some props here to this Iona team and Tim Kloos. They've done really well ever since. I think the last game they dropped was, when was it? It was back in December, wasn't it? They're just one of those teams that keeps winning. They're winning on the road. They're winning at home. I mean, they've had to sweat out some of them, but you're going to have that in any conference with the familiarity and the rivalry. They've done a really good job. They really have. I'm impressed. I thought about putting them in my top 10. I really like this team.
Yeah, they did lose January 18th at Canisius, one of their two conference losses. The other one came back in early December when they played an early conference game.
Yeah.
Second place team there is Ryder. I'm sorry,
Ryder. Yeah.
Yeah, Ryder. But I was going to say, Iona's already swept Ryder on the season, won both games from them. So they're well in place here to get that number one seed. The conference tournament is in Albany. Siena will be hosting it. Siena's sitting at the 8th seed right now, meaning Iona could be playing a road game in the quarterfinals. David, I know you love that.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. That is the kind of game that Iona would lose, and then you'd have to say they Kloos, but you would also have to say, well, they lost a road game when they should have never been playing on the road.
Is that Grigsing?
Yeah, that is Grigsing. Oh, God. Oh, man.
In the Mid-American, I know you're a big fan of this Toledo team, which has been coming on strong lately. Going into the season, we picked Toledo to win the West and Akron to win the East. I think we both agreed on that.
Yeah.
Early in the season, it did not look like that would be happening at all. Right now, they've got 3-8-3 teams. Toledo, first place in the West at 8-3. Akron tied with Bowling Green on the top of the East Division. So, things have balanced out, gotten to where they should have been.
Right. Now, again, I actually put Toledo in my top 10 this week. I still consider them to be one of the more underachieving teams season-wide. This team had chances out of conference. They were good enough to take advantage of them, and they didn't. And on top of that, I mean, they've Kloosed way more than Kloos has this year. Just awful losses. But the last few weeks, the last stretch of games, they're looking like that team that we thought they would be. And it again, which is good that they got it in gear, but it's also kind of a shame that they wasted an opportunity to really land inside the bubble, because when this team is playing at the top of their game, they are really good. I mean, they're the kind of team that could get out of the round of 64. Their paper won't show it, but that's the kind of team they have.
Now, at the very beginning of the season, we did our preseason, some of our preseason items here. I told you to watch out for this Bowling Green team this year, and I think you laughed at me.
Well, let's move on. We got it. We're on a tangent.
Bowling Green sitting here tied for first. Now, they do have three conference losses, and those three conference losses were twice to Akron and once to Toledo, so they have not proven they can beat the top of the conference yet, but they're undefeated against the rest of them, and that's what you got to do if you want to be up there.
Well, I want to say they're one of the bigger surprises. I mean, they're not UC Davis surprising, but I can't even say that because you called it back in the preseason, and yeah, I did laugh. Because it was preposterous. I thought they'd finish sixth.
Bowling Green always finishes sixth.
But great year for them. Who's their coach? I forgot.
The head coach over there at Bowling Green. Chris Jans over at
Chris
Bowling
Jans.
Green.
Okay,
and he's been there for, like, no, I'm sorry, he's a first-year coach there.
Yeah, he's a first-year coach, doing a hell of a job. I knew he was a first-year coach, but, man.
Yeah, he replaced Lou Orr. We previously replaced Dan Dakich, who's one of our favorite announcers, but we'll move on.
And again, Izeki Zumba, one of the greatest chants ever. So,
MEAC, we still have another one of our teams that's still undefeated in its conference, is North Carolina Central team.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to give somebody a scare in the tournament. I really
if they
do.
Get there, yeah, I agree. They really can. They didn't. I was a little surprised they got beaten so handily last year. I thought they'd play a little better, or they were a little better than what they played. They're capable of doing it, but then again, they're capable of kind of blowing it too.
Yeah, what kind of disappointed me? They went. We talked about this last week actually, but they played a non-conference game at East Tennessee State, and really a game that they should have won and did not.
Yeah.
That is. Really their worst, that is by far their worst loss. Their other losses were at Memphis, at Maryland, at Cincinnati, at North Carolina, and at Creighton. I mean, Creighton's
and in some of those games too, they played pretty well. I mean, they really did. Now, another thing about, like, NC Central, again, an interesting history. They haven't been Div 1 for very long. Made their first ever NCAA tournament last year. Went through their transitional phase, and like all transitional teams, winning 3 and 4 games a year. So, one of the real success stories of a recent transitional team, Florida Gulf Coast obviously being the biggest, but NC Central, pretty good move, good decision to move up.
Yep. I think they began their move up right around the same time that Winston-Salem State did, and
yes.
Winston-Salem went the other direction and complete their transition. Because you may recall that MEAC used to run that bonus game during their tournament, where they'd have NC Central and Winston-Salem were both in transition, play a regular season game against each other during the conference tournament so that those two teams could come along and play as well.
Right, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. We need to bring back the MEAC bonus game. We got to find a way to restore that.
Well,
maybe we can have, like, FAMU play, like, San Jose State or something.
Yeah. South Carolina State, by the way, in the middle of this league, 9-17 on the year. Not having the best of years, but, oh, man, I just hate what's going on there.
Missouri Valley Conference, obviously we can't talk Northern Iowa or Wichita State, and I don't think anybody else is worth discussing here.
No, I mean, Evansville having a much improved year, not an NCAA tournament team, but they're really trending up. They're going to be, I think that it's possible they could get an NIT bid, but they would have to really kind of sprint to the finish even to get that.
Well, they should get a postseason invite from one of the, at least from the CIT or the CBI, though, this year. Northeast Conference, we talked about Bill and Mary, St. Francis, Brooklyn, and the second team that's been around since 48,
never made
the field and is looking like a tournament team this year, playing in that little tiny Pope Center there on the second floor of their building. There was a real nice article about it today.
Article. We're going to try and link that if we remember. And if I don't, go ahead and put it in if you see. But, just a really big year, probably the best year they've ever had. I don't ever recall, they've been in the conference championship game a couple times.
Yeah, two or three times. It was in that article.
Yeah, and then was it last year or the year before? I think it was last year. They got off to a fantastic start, really took Syracuse to the wall, took Dayton to the wall. They may have beaten Syracuse. But anyway, like...
They beat Miami last year. They lost to Syracuse in a close one. They lost...
I think that Syracuse game was in overtime, and then Dayton needed... they had a couple good – so going in the conference play, you felt really good about them, but they fizzled out. This year they have a two-game lead. They're going to have home court advantage throughout that conference tournament. And if they get to that semifinal, if they get to that final, there's going to be, I think, 1,500 people that are actually there and about 10,000 that will claim that they were there.
Brooklyn last year, actually, in their quarterfinal game against Mount St. Mary's, had, I believe, about a 19-point lead halfway through the second half.
Yeah,
we utterly collapsed and lost the game by 1 point at Mount St. Mary's.
Yeah.
And it was just such a disappointing, but they've really bounced back this year.
Right.
You know, that's the type of loss that could be a hangover into the following season, and it has not been for them.
Yeah, and they're archived if you want to go back and listen to our championship week notebook. We were going crazy because I don't think we were broadcasting while the game was going on, but we were on the call and just watching them lose. And they lost bizarrely because the other team had 6 players on the court for the final play.
Yeah.
The rest missed it, so, wow.
One more undefeated team in conference, Murray State, 11-0 right now in the Ohio Valley. Should easily wrap up the West Division there. I think the interesting battle in the OVC is for the East Division title. They do use a ladder format with two teams getting buys into the semis, and those two teams are the two division champions. The rest of the field in the conference tournament is just seeded by overall record, but two division champions get the top two seeds. And right now, as we broadcast this, Eastern Kentucky is up 5 on, on Morehead State.
So big kind of stakes games here.
Yeah, and Belmont is right there in the mix as well. It should be an interesting battle, at least for that East Division title going the rest of the season here.
Right, which is a double bye. And again, pretty decent rivalry in this conference. This Morehead State-EKU rivalry is heated up this year a little bit. Murray and Morehead are rivals. Murray and Belmont's been a decent rivalry. This year's edition of Murray State, they were a team we really, really liked coming into the year. And we said that if they failed to win 30 games, they will have underachieved. I still think that's true. Their schedule was pathetically weak, losing to Houston, and again, no real big wins. But I will say this, if they get through this OVC tournament and get to the round of 64, I think you're going to see them on the 13 line. And this team is a live wire team. They can give you headaches. They might be one of those teams that's capable of pulling an upset. I mean, when they play up to their ceiling, they are really good. The problem is they don't always do it.
Well, the biggest hurdle they may still have ahead of them is if Belmont does end up being their matchup in either the semifinals or the championship game. This tournament's in Nashville, David.
Yeah, it is. And again, Murray will have their fans there. It's a well-supported program. But yeah, it is in Nashville, so it won't be easy. It wasn't the last time they won it.
The Patriot League, much like the Big South, a conference that is a complete mess. Bucknell and Colgate are starting to pull a little bit away from the pack here, but you still have seven teams that I think could end up in first place in this conference at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, our beloved cadets are not among them.
No.
Army, I mean, it's kind of disappointing. I was hoping they'd at least get a home game in the quarterfinals. It's looking like it's going to take a Herculean effort just to get that.
And the Patriot League, just to tell you what good this conference has been this year, there are two conferences in the country where everybody in the conference has lost at least 10 games so far this season.
Yes.
The SWAC is not one of them. The Patriot League and the WAC are those two conferences. So
yes.
We're looking at a trip to Dayton for whoever comes out of this.
Most likely, yeah.
11-1 in conference, not undefeated in conference, due to one of the most mystifying losses of the year is this Wofford team, but they are starting to play well again. They've now run off seven straight wins since that loss at the Citadel.
And you can't think this way, but we're going to do it anyway. Without that loss, this team would have at least gotten the attention of the committee. Oh, what a horrible loss.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when you talk about a committee attention for an at-large bid, you would have to throw in, well, there's going to be another loss to a 100-plus team because everyone else in this conference is a 100, RPI 100-plus team. So with that additional bad loss plus this loss to Citadel, I don't see, despite a home win over Iona, despite a win over a pretty good Sam Houston State Gate team, and a win at NC State, which...
Yeah.
I mean, NC State almost beat Virginia tonight.
Right.
They beat Duke at home, so it's not easy to win at NC State.
Right, and this is something what we might touch on tomorrow if we remember. But, I mean, if you watch the Under the Radar, the difference between the teams on that fill out the 12 line, which is normally where the bubble is, and the 13 line are heads and the difference between a 13 and a 14 is huge, which means – the difference between a 3 and a 4 seed is huge, at least as far as the round of 64 goes. This is a really good Wofford team.
Yeah. And this is a team that has a real good shot, at least being on that 12 line, I'd say.
Yeah.
But not inside the bubble.
Right.
A team that could be inside the bubble, and I still think that they will be getting a lot of talk if they keep doing what they're doing right now, is this SFA team over in the Southland.
Yeah.
With 3 losses on this season, and they were all to teams that are solidly in the field, and 2 of those 3 being protected seed category right now.
Yeah. How many, and again, let's get categorical, which I know I say we should never do. Let's do it anyway. If you have their profile in front of you, which I don't, how many top 100 wins do they have? The one against Sam Houston.
They won at Memphis. That is considered a top 100 win, and it's a top 100 road win.
Yeah.
I have tried to pull up their RPI numbers. I only had their KenPom numbers in front of me, so just give me half a second here.
Okay.
Their home win over Long Beach State is a top 100 win.
Two.
Their win at Sam Houston is an RPI 102 win. Now, if we're going to assume that they make it to the conference tournament championship game and lose there to Sam Houston, Sam Houston's RPI will become a top 100 RPI with that win.
Yeah, and again, we're getting categorical here. I don't think anybody's ever gotten an at-large bid with that few top 100 wins, but there have been teams.
And it would actually be four, because I would assume that they also get a second win over Sam Houston in the regular season on March 7th. So.
Okay, yeah. And there have. Pacific, although, I mean, and again, none of the current committee members were on this committee, but Pacific had four top 100 wins and got onto the nine line as an at-large. I think Utah State won it that year. That was 2005. Again, too long ago to really be a reference. Davidson, the Seth Curry year, did not have a single top 100 win. They were an automatic bid, but they were inside the bubble as a first-place team. On the 10 line, and again, when you're on the 10 line, you have to assume that they would have, that's two, three lines in front of the bubble, you have to assume that they would have been in had they not won the conference tournament. I think Siena was way up there one year with just two or three inside the bubble.
Middle Tennessee team, was there not?
Yeah, Middle Tennessee, and I think they were an at-large bid with only one top 100 win, were they not?
They played
the ninth overall toughest out of conference schedule.
Well, and that's the difference here. I mean, SFA did not play the tough non conference schedule. I mean, with this SFA team, when I did my latest bracket back on Sunday night, I had them. It was neck and neck with them whether they would be above the worst of the last at large teams or below them. They were still below them. What you see this time of year, and I mentioned this the other night, is that the bubble teams keep losing, and so a team that keeps winning, even if it's against garbage competition, creeps its way up on that list slowly, because teams like that are right there in the first four right now, teams like Miami go and lose at Wake Forest tonight, stuff like that happens, and that's why I think that by the end of the day, you may see this SFA team in a lot of people's fields sitting there in an 11 seed or a 10 seed.
Another thing that might work in their favor is that NABC ranking.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask people from that region, when you ask the person from the Southland, when you ask the person from Baylor, you know, the Big 12 who is watching this, whoever those coaches are, what do you think of Stephen F. Austin? I can't imagine that they don't have anything but praise for them. I also think, again, this is how close it is. They win that game against Northern Iowa, the game they lost in overtime. I don't even think we're having this discussion.
I think they're in the top 25 right now nationally if they won that game.
Right, and they might get close to the top 25. At first I thought no way, but again, the committee has this thing. They didn't show it as much last year, but they have this thing of favoring outright first-place teams. We've seen it with the inclusion of UAB. We've seen it with the inclusion of Middle Tennessee, who you said Iona was not a first-place team the year they got an at-large bid. But, okay, bad example. But if you're an outright first-place finisher, the committee seems to favor that. And an outright first-place finisher, if they can get their RPI into the 60s and with three top 100 wins and a high NABC ranking, I've gone from no way to maybe on this one. I still say no, but I'm starting to see. I'll say this. I could make a case for them if I really had to.
Well, right now they still have eight regular season games left. They've got to win all eight of those. So that's the first step for them that will go from there. The SWAC.
Boy.
Texas Southern lost at home over the weekend to Prairie View.
And I believe that is worthy of the 16 line, perhaps even.
I mean, how far does wins at Michigan State and at Kansas State carry a team when it has now lost two games in the SWAC to sub-300 teams?
I mean, they're outside the bubble. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that.
I think the big question here is 16 line. Dayton, 16 line or 15 line is the real question.
I think they're on the 16 line. I don't think they're down to the first four yet, I don't think. Especially with the Northeast, the WAC, and, well.
And the amazing thing here is with Alabama State, Alabama State ineligible, odds are if Texas Southern does not win the automatic bid from the SWAC, we are going to have a team with a losing record in the tournament. The next best overall record after Texas Southern's 11-12, Southern, who's ineligible, 11-14, is Jackson State, who's 8-16 right now. Let's change that. We will have a team with a sub-500 record.
Okay, look, I have the number. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 teams that are sub-300 in the. That is amazing. How did they do that?
And you're missing a. That's the eighth right there.
What's that?
It's amazing. Over in the Summit League, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, flip a coin, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think they play each other coming up here.
Yeah, we're going to get to that preview in games in just a minute or two here, and that is one of the big games we're looking forward to this week.
Yeah, should be fun.
We'll move quickly here. We're running behind a bit here. We want to wrap things up. The Sun Belt. Right now, Louisiana Monroe has opened up a half-game lead over Georgia Southern. I still like this Georgia Southern team, though.
I do, too. I think that when it comes down to it, they're going to get it done in the conference tournament.
And still, Georgia State, we thought they were battling back, lose last week to Georgia Southern.
Georgia Southern having a hell of a year this year. Really good for them.
Over in the West Coast Conference, I have not written off BYU completely yet. I know you'd rather I did, but
I would very much like it if you did.
They have a home win over Stanford. They have a few bad losses here, but they play St. Mary's at home tomorrow night. They play at Gonzaga to end the regular season. You win those two, you beat St. Mary's again, and lose to Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference Finals, you get a look. That's what they have to do. It's the win out, but. Right. I don't think St. Mary's is there. I think St. Mary's is a step below them and can't get there.
And then on to last and definitely least, transitional Grand Canyon in second place. That's never good when a transitional team is in second place.
Every team in here, this conference with double-digit losses, New Mexico State 7-1 in the conference, they're still our pick. And, I've kind of kept a bit of a tally of the teams I've been focusing in on the under-the-radar games of the day. And I keep looking for a WAC game almost every day. Can I focus on a WAC game? Because it's the WAC, and it's always been fun. I haven't found a game worth mentioning yet, because this conference is so horrible. And
it's awful. Man. But New Mexico State is going most likely back to the NCAA tournament. Again,
yes. So. And the team of the people.
Yes. Clinching it, getting it done, guaranteed a winning record. Huge game coming up. Is it this Friday?
It's Friday night. They're hosting Albany. It is their final home game against a D1 team. They have two non-D1 home games and then a game at Howard to end the season. So only four games left. Three more chances to see them. The best game that you'll see from them is this Friday night. Unless
That's
you want
crazy.
To go down to D.C. Maybe we'll go down to D.C. on March 4th and see that game against Howard. I don't know.
Yeah, well, again, it's $9 to get in and $15 to not get in. It's more expensive to watch from home than it is to go to the game.
Yeah, $9 to get into the game. They got a little snack bar there. You can get a Diet Coke or a bag of M&Ms. If you need to use the restroom, don't worry. You'll be the only one in it because there won't be any lines because there's no one there. So don't.
Yeah.
It's a fun. It's really fun. It's a loud. It's an energetic crowd. Not a huge crowd, but it will be a fun game. So if you're in the area, go.
Yeah, and Chad, I'm dipping into our funds for that one. I think.
All right. quickly want to run through our top tens and do a real quick preview of next week. Top tens for me is Old Dominion 1, Stephen F. Austin 2, Green Bay 3.
I have Wofford all the way up at 3. I have Green Bay actually down at 5. I've been really disappointed with how they've been playing. It just seems like when they win, they're sweating out weak teams. I actually have Murray State up at 4. They don't have the paper. They're not as accomplished as Green Bay, but I just think that they're better more consistently than Green Bay is.
Well, if Green Bay had not come back and won this game tonight, we would have had an identical list, but I still have them at 3 right now, with Wofford at 4, Murray at 5. 6, I have Eastern Washington.
As do I.
At 7, I have Louisiana Tech.
I have them down at 9. I have UC Davis all the way up at number 7.
I did put on my list at number 10, but I think that's a little high.
It might be a little sentimental for me, but I'm just having so much fun watching this team. They're in first place out in the Big West. I liked Long Beach. You did too. I think Davis has proven themselves to be better than Long Beach, so why not put them at number 7?
My other two teams I have are Harvard, who I still think has a talent to be up on this list, so they're there, and Valpo, who I do like.
Yeah, I have Toledo on my list, who we talked about earlier, Valpo there, and of course I felt the need to include the Centenary Award winner, Florida A&M,
who is
not getting shut down, but might as well be basketball.
Let's just do a quick run through some of the upcoming key under-the-radar games, starting tomorrow night, Thursday night. Almost an elimination game if either of these teams are on the at-large bubble, St. Mary's at BYU.
Yeah. And again, there's no guarantee that either of them will be there, but if one of them wants to get there, they need to win tomorrow and do more on top of that. So I agree with that one.
In my desire to mention a whack game, Seattle's at New Mexico State. Seattle, the second best eligible team in the behind New Mexico State, maybe.
Yeah, just a side note, as far as the two towns, Seattle and Las Cruces, basically the same place, just as much going on in both. Okay.
Sacramento State at Eastern Washington is the big one for tomorrow night that we already mentioned in the Big Sky.
Yeah.
A road test for Long Beach at UC Santa Barbara tomorrow night as well, so that's an important game for them if they want to stay up there in the standings.
Yeah.
Several good games coming up Friday night. Kent State is at Toledo in a pretty good game out of the MAC among two teams that are up there in the standings. Huge game in the Horizon League. Green Bay is at Valpo.
Yeah, that is massive. So, again, destination television Friday night. First place implications, double buy implications.
Yeah. That one's on ESPN2, so they even upgraded that one to network. The Albany NJIT game we already mentioned. Tough game for Iona coming up Friday night. They're at Manhattan. It's a 10 p.m. start for national TV also, so that's one to keep an eye on there.
Yeah, you're going to want to watch this one. I realize that the storyline isn't as good as what we're used to seeing, and I hesitate to say big rivalry because it's the Metro Atlantic. This is a bitter rivalry. It really is. They don't like each other. It's going to be just tune in. You'll be shocked. It's great theater.
A couple of games coming up on Saturday here. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, who might be the third or fourth best team in the Southland, is hosting Stephen F. Austin. Must win for SFA. They should win it, but always dangerous to be going up against a decent team by conference standards, at least on the road.
Yeah.
North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Saturday. We just mentioned that a minute ago. Huge game at the top of the Summit League.
Yeah, and that one's going to be fun.
Big game coming up on Saturday at 6 o'clock p.m. with huge Centenary Award implications here. Florida A&M, one of their most winnable games left, is hosting North Carolina A&T. So keep an eye out. There's a chance there. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen Saturday.
Right.
Morehead State's at Belmont in another big game, back-to-back huge games for Morehead in the OVC.
For sure. And again, with the double bye on the round.
David, who do you think is going to win this game here Saturday night? Texas Southern at Grambling.
What the hell? I'm going to go with Grambling.
Wow. Going for that first D1 win and getting out of the Centenary Ward conversation.
Yes, I'm going for... I'm rooting for Grambling, so I'm picking Grambling, even though I don't think they have a chance.
And ODU is at UTEP in another huge game on Saturday evening.
Very important game. Not an easy game to win, but what do we always say, Chad? If you want to get to the tournament, you have to win games that are not easy to win.
Yeah.
The Old Dominion really needs that one.
That's huge. I mean, you win that game, I think they become squarely back in the field for everybody's projections, not just ours.
Right, yeah.
Coming up on Sunday, Bucknell, the first-place team in the Patriot League as of now, is at Army, as maybe our Cadets could start a late-season comeback.
Yeah, I hope so. God, just finish fourth and get to host one game.
Yeah. And Wofford has a tough road test at Western Carolina, probably the third or fourth best team in the Southern, so keep an eye on that one.
Yeah.
A few big games coming up Monday night. NJIT has another home game against Maine Fort Kent, so if you can't get up there Friday night, go see Maine Fort Kent.
Oh, God. Yes.
SFA has another road game. After their game at Corpus Christi, they go right over to San Antonio to play at Incarnate Word, so that's a back-to-back road test against some pretty...
Yeah,
Incarnate Southland teams.
In Incarnate Word having a really, really good year by transitional team standards.
They won at Nebraska.
Everybody winning at Nebraska is turning into a pastime.
Sure. Coastal Carolina Radford is one game I'm looking at for the Big South, but pretty much every Big South game is big.
Yeah.
Here's another game I want your winner pick on, David, coming up Monday night. North Carolina A&M.
Yeah, you broke up there. What's the game?
North Carolina Central at Florida A&M.
I like NC Central's chances in that one.
Yeah, I think they could win by about 100 points in that game.
They could miss the bus and show up at halftime and still win.
That'd be interesting. They probably could.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. There's not too much going on Tuesday, and we'll be back here again by Wednesday night. So, other thoughts here? Any other final comments as you're getting ready for your big trip to Indy here?
No, I mean, I just got to get ready for Andy B. Sharon turn in tomorrow when we... I don't know. Are we going to build a bracket, or is it still too early for that? We might just do the seed list again tomorrow.
We're going to let you know because we may or may not have something else going on tomorrow night as well. So we'll just tune in. It'll be a big surprise.
Yeah, and it's so big we don't even know what's going to happen yet.
So. All right, so on that note, have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.